live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back, Silver and Black Today, hour number two on this Thursday, Raider Nation Radio, as the Raiders get prepped to go back east yet again, face the New York Jets, go back to the House of Horrors from last year, where the Jets took care of the Raiders in embarrassing fashion, pretty much kind of ending their season right there, right, Q? I mean,
yeah,
there was no question about that one.
No, that was the beginning of the end for the Raiders right there. I mean, they had an opportunity to go on a run, and then they took that big fat L to the Jets, and it was over after that.
Yes, and by the way, it's funny because we're going to get to Dan Leverfield here in just a second from Jets Confidential. This is one of those weeks that gets a little uncomfortable in the studio, Q, because, you know, Chris Chapman, our engineer and producer, is a Jets fan.
Oh, he's not cheering for anything, though. He's probably, and if you ask him, and I'm sure he can hear me, but he probably does not want the Jets to win this game. He probably wants them to assure themselves that they're going to get that number one overall pick, because if you look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're right behind the Jets. They're not winning too many games either, so they might actually steal that number one spot if the Jets decide to go ahead and win a couple games.
Well, here's the problem. I've been a Jet fan for 35 years. It doesn't matter what quarterback they draft in the first round. They'll end up being a disaster. Browning-Nagel. Actually, he was a second-round pick, but
yeah,
they'll end up screwing it up.
I mean, hey, Trevor Lawrence is a good start. Joe Douglas is a good GM.
He is.
That's my hope. That's my hope. My hope is they get rid of Gaze and they allow Joe Douglas to bring in the right coach. And my hope is Eric Bieniemy, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
Nah, no, it's not happening. No, well, the reason I say that is because he's going to be a package deal. Homeboy that was the GM in Kansas City and Cleveland as well. That is familiar with Bieniemy. I believe those two are going to be a 1-2 punch. You know what I mean? Like the GM will get hired and then the coach will come with them. And so Joe Douglas is in place in New York. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go now and talk to our good friend, Dan Leverfield from Jets Confidential. He'll get us all up to speed and Chris will be listening intently since he is a Jets fan. And Dan joins us now. Dan, how you doing today?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Chilling.
Doing great. So I think I know the answer to this a little bit, but what's the mood like there? Adam Gase, you know, I look at this as almost like dead man walking. He admitted today, I read an AP piece, that he hasn't done enough to develop Sam Darnold. I mean, is it covering the team like you do so well and have done for so long, Dan? What is this like being around kind of something everyone knows how the ending is going to go?
Yeah, it's very strange when you look at the situation as far as other teams that have pulled the trigger on getting rid of the coach and going with interim coach in Houston with Romeo Crennel, Atlanta with Raheem Morris, and now Detroit with Darren Bevell. So other teams have done it. For some reason, the Jets have not done it. I would think the reason is under the ownership of Woody and Christopher Johnson. Over the last 20 years, they've never fired a coach in season and gone with an interim coach. So I guess they're set in their ways and they won't do that. But it is kind of strange because it seems like since the Denver game early in the year, you got the sense right before that game, Chris Mortensen of ESPN reported that that was a game that management was really looking at to see how Gase and the Jets responded, and they lost to the lowly Broncos in that game. So it's been a really, really long stretch of time where you got the feeling the coach is in trouble, but he continues to stay on running the program.
Is there a coach or a guy that maybe Jets fans or you guys in the media have in mind that you think would be a good head coach potentially there in New York?
I know it's cliche to talk about culture, and I think John Gruden's done a good job building the Raiders culture last week notwithstanding. When you look at the Jets, I think they need an established head coach, perhaps from the college ranks, who has a history of building strong football cultures, because right now their culture is not very good. And when you look at Matt Rhule, is a guy that they talked to 2 years ago when they ended up hiring Adam Gase. And what killed that deal was the fact that Mike Maccagnan and some of the people involved in that coaching search were forcing assistant coaches on Matt Rhule. If he wanted the job, he'd have to accept certain assistant coaches. And Matt Rhule said, I don't believe in arranged marriages, so he backed out. And now he's doing a pretty good job as the Carolina Panthers coach, though his clock management wasn't very good at the end of that Minnesota game, but that's another story. So I think the Jets will be looking, or should be looking, for a strong culture coach. All the guys they've hired up at this point have been hot assistant coaches under the Johnsons who they hired, and it just didn't work out, guys that hadn't proven they could be effective NFL head coaches. So I'd be looking at some of the hot college coaches. You know, I'd even be looking at the Cincinnati coach, just somebody that you know can build a strong culture, because right now the Jets football culture is broken. So I wouldn't rule out the college ranks.
Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential. You can follow him on Twitter at Jets Whispers. And Dan, you look at the situation, the story I mentioned about Sam Darnold, and with the Jets where they are, with Trevor Lawrence sitting there dangling as the first pick in the draft, it looks like he will be, unless something drastic happens, he will be the next quarterback drafted by the Jets. How much of Sam Darnold's lack of development is the Adam Gase show, or is there something else there? Was Sam Darnold never really a good fit in New York? Is his talent level not what they thought it was, or is it a mixture of all of them?
Yeah, a mixture of all of them is the way to go there. Adam Gase, you know, there's a lot of things you can blame him for, and surprisingly, and I'm sure your producer will be shocked at this, I don't blame him too much for Sam Darnold. I think there are inherent problems there that I don't know which coach could fix. He's not particularly good at going through his reads. And talking to Gil Brandt, who I work with at Sirius XM NFL Radio, and I asked him about Darnold, and he said, you could see the issues reading defenses. You guys will remember this being in Vegas. You guys are always so on top of all these big matchups. The Cotton Bowl, when Ohio State played USC, and Sam Darnold had a really bad game, and some people were like, wait a minute, maybe this is not a top three pick, because he was so bad, and that was the best defense he ever faced, going from the Pac-12, which isn't known for defenses, to facing Ohio State, which is always loaded with high draft picks. And they lost 24-7. Sam Darnold threw a couple interceptions and had a really bad game. And Gil Brandt said that was perhaps a warning for the NFL level, because there were struggles reading defenses in college, and then they translated to the NFL. So the only thing I'll say about Adam Gase related to making Sam Darnold better is if he was Sean McVay. We all know Jared Goff is not the greatest quarterback, but Sean McVay is so masterful at calling plays to mask his weaknesses that sometimes Jared Goff looks just fine. I don't think Adam Gase has done a great job as far as perhaps calling games where he can hide Sam's weaknesses, dial up a ton of great first reads, and make him look like a top-shelf quarterback. So if you're going to criticize Gase for anything, it would be perhaps not simplifying the game with his play calling.
How much has it been on the front office for not really putting the proper weapons around him? I mean, I know you have Denzel Mims, who's a second-round draft pick out of Baylor, and he's been playing pretty well. He didn't play the whole season, but he's been playing pretty well as of late. But outside of that, you know, I mean, you got Frank Gore, who I respect the hell out of, but he's the old Frank Gore. So there's not really too many weapons around him. I mean, how much is that kind of blame going on the front office?
Well, it's interesting with the weapons. Earlier in the year, Joe Douglas, who you guys brought up before, who I think is the most talented football person in the building and a guy that can help the Jets forge a great future. Management ownership needs to let him pick the head coach, because oftentimes when owners pick head coaches, they're not the best at it. And that goes around the league as far as not looking for the right thing. So let Joe Douglas pick the coach. And Joe Douglas, people were critical around the year for letting Robbie Anderson walk in free agency start with Carolina, and they said, you don't have any weapons for Sam Darnold. Actually, his plan wasn't as bad as it looked like early in the year, because now that Denzel Mims is back, he had hamstring issues earlier in the year, and now that Perryman is back, and he's played really well recently, he had some injuries. The plan to replace Robbie Anderson is actually reaching fruition now later in the year. Perryman and Mims both playing very well. Jamison Crowder is a very good slot receiver, played well last year, is playing well this year. So there were issues with Darnold's weapons early in the year when Mims and Perryman were out. But in defense of Joe Douglas, his plan with Perryman And with Mims, is actually working out very well now. It's not showing in the one loss record, but if you guys saw that Charger game, and you saw the recent New England game, those receivers look very good for the Jets. And Joe Flacco actually played in some of those games. But one thing on Douglas, his first draft is starting to look real good, especially at the top with Mekhi Becton, the potential franchise left tackle, and Denzel Mims in the first two rounds.
Well, one of the guys that we like to talk about, because it was a player that I really loved coming in the draft, was Quinnen Williams. I thought he might have been a candidate for the Raiders as well. Talk about the year he's had. I've had fun watching film of him in preparation for this game. He's playing hard. And then talk a little bit about how that defense, what they're going to do and what they need to fill holes for next year.
Yeah, Quinnen Williams has really, really stepped up recently. He's got that amazing foot quickness for a 300-pounder, and he's showing that recently, shooting into gaps and beating overmatched guards who he's athletically superior to. You've seen a lot of it recently. He had an absolute monster game in the Jets' loss to Miami last week, so that pick is working out. So you could say the Jets have three strong cornerstones moving forward in Mekhi Becton at left tackle, Denzel Mims at receiver, and a quality interior pass rusher in Quinnen Williams. And they have a ton of draft picks moving forward. So with Joe Douglas looking like a good evaluator of talent, especially based on his first draft, they should be able to add some more top-shelf talent in the upcoming drafts. And defense, as you brought up, Scott, they have some holes to fill there. They need an edge rusher. Quinnen Williams is an interior rusher and a very good one, but they're not great off the edge. And when you see the game on Sunday, Derek Carr should have plenty of time to throw if they can take care of Quinnen Williams on the interior. They could use a number one corner. Now, the fifth-round pick out of Virginia, who finally was activated a couple weeks ago, they drafted him coming off a broken ankle at UVA. If Bryce Hall did not break his ankle at UVA, he probably would have been a second-round pick. But he was picked in the fifth round because he still wasn't 100%. So that looks like a nice pick. But Bryce Hall's more of a number two corner. So I would say number one corner, shutdown corner, and edge rusher. But you guys know that's about every team's shopping list in the draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I know when you're a team that hasn't won a game, there's a lot of areas that need improvement, like you just kind of rolled out there. But in your opinion, what do you feel like is the weakest area of this Jets team this year?
That's a tough question because your producer might fall off his chair. But Sam Darnold's really, really struggling. He really is. And I feel bad for him. He's a good guy. He works hard. But the position is so hard. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. After covering the Jets-Dolphins game where Sam Darnold threw two really rough interceptions, that night was the Bears game, and I'm watching Mitch Trubisky, and I'm seeing the same problems with Sam Darnold. The position is so hard. It's so hard. I mean, let's be honest. Derek Carr, it's funny. A couple weeks ago on Sirius XM NFL Radio, I said, you know, I have to tip my hat to Derek Carr because I've been pretty rough on him because I accused him of taking too much stuff underneath, thinking dunk quarterback. So I got to tip my hat to him after criticizing him so much. And then he has that Atlanta game, which is unfortunate for him. So you just don't know with the position. But Sam Darnold's giving it his best shot. But like I said before, not great at going through his progressions. Too often locks on his first read. You know, not manipulating defensive backs with his eyes. So he's taking them to the football, as you saw in those two interceptions last week. So they need much better quarterback play. And I do think that if they do get the first pick in the draft, they will pick Trevor Lawrence. And if they hire the right, if they move on from Adam Gase and they make a coaching change, if they get the right staff in there, I think that Trevor Lawrence will work out well in New York, because if it's the right coach and with Joe Douglas, who you talk to anyone around the league, you talk to people in the Raiders front office, everyone respects Joe Douglas as a talent evaluator in the NFL. He learned at the hip of Ozzie Newsome in Baltimore, worked there 15 years. Ozzie Newsome, one of the best talent evaluators of the modern era. So Joe Douglas knows what he's doing. So if they let Joe Douglas pick the next coach, if they make a coaching change, and they pick Trevor Lawrence, and they have the right coach and the right GM, I have to say this to your producer, I do think Trevor Lawrence will work out with the Jets if that's the direction they go, and if it's the right coach and the right GM.
Yeah, and they have that second first-round draft pick, too, because of the Jamal Adams trade. So the Jets will get an infusion of talent. Dan Leberfield, Jets Confidential, at Jet Whispers, Jets Whispers on Twitter. Also catch him, SiriusXM NFL Radio. Dan, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Always great to be on with you guys. Can't wait to see you guys. I was hoping this game was in Las Vegas. It wouldn't have. Well, actually, I could have attended as a beat writer.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to see your new stadium. It looks tremendous.
Yeah, you'll love it. And we will we'll buy you dinner when you're here.
Sounds good. Always great to be on.
That was Scott talking. That was Scott talking, brother. My pockets ain't built like that.
All right,
okay,
Dan.
We'll go to In-N-Out Burger.
Have a good time at the game, man. We appreciate you. Take care now.
Okay, have a good one.
All right, there you go. Dan Leberfield. Good stuff.
He trying to sell me short like that, man. No, trying to make me come out my pocket, man. It's tough these days to get some money, man.
Q, it's Vegas. I'll get you a comp, baby. Come on.
Oh, hey, do what you do. Hey, that's man, right. I'm not the mayor of the city. That's you, man. As long as you're the mayor, you do what you do.
No, I'm not the mayor. I'm the most wanted. Come on now. All right, that's gonna close out this segment. We're gonna take a break, and then when we get back, you'll get a meal of a different sort. You'll get fed by the Q-tip as he goes down with one of his soapbox moments, which you won't want to miss. You're here with Q and Scott on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Here we are back, Silver and Black today, powered by Salmon Ash. Injury attorneys, call them anytime, 702-820-1234. So, Q, are you like a new man that you don't have this echo in your ear?
Yeah, man, it's awesome, man. It really is. It's like I'm on a next level now. You know, it's like I'm really, you know, I'm where I'm supposed to be.
It's awesome. For the listeners, so when we started the show in August, we use a piece of software that connects Q from his home in Texas in his home studio to the studio here at Raider Nation Radio. Well, that technology usually works I've used it for a couple of years, very good. When we were in shutdown mode here, I was doing our show at the other station from home for 3 months. You know, it all worked fine. But for some reason, we couldn't get it right here. We couldn't figure out we had an issue. And so for the last 4 months, Q has been such a consummate professional dealing with hearing himself back in his ear every single day.
Yep. Every time I talk, it would echo.
So I'm yes.
Every single time it would echo back and it would throw me off. And especially me, I like to talk. And so when I start talking, man, all of a sudden it's like I'm talking, I'm yelling back at myself. And it's not very cool.
Now you know how your wife feels.
Right, exactly.
Right? But we fixed it finally, and it was such an easy fix. It's like one of those deals where, like, you're kidding me. But anyway, so we're glad that he has that. And also our guests, like we had Evan on. He was on via the same system. No problems. And we'll have Mo on tomorrow. Same thing. So it's good. So that's gone well this week, and I appreciate that very much. But one of the things, too, that we also want to talk about is the fact that the Raiders, again, with the charity stuff. So the Raiders continue to go out there and just do good things in the community. And then you get every once in a while, too, you start to get players. This is the time of the year the NFL starts nominating players and recognizing players for the good work that they're doing out there. And we had another Raider nominated today for the Art Rooney Sportsmanship Award, and that, of course, was Derek Carr. So 32 players, so one from every team, are nominated. It's the fifth straight year that Carr has been nominated for the award, which, by the way, was won by a Raider in 2015 when Charles Woodson won it. So
see Wood, the
yes,
ghost.
He won it in 2015. So good stuff there, and not a surprise that Derek Carr is there. All the stuff he's done with the Children's Hospital in Fresno and what he's continuing to do here in Las Vegas as well. So good stuff. Okay, it's that time of the day where we give you a dose of the truth. We give you a dose of my man Q. Here is the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
You know, yesterday I challenged the Raiders to, you know, go out there and play for the guy next to him. Go out there and play for that symbol on the side of the helmet. Go out there and play for the family. You know, I went in and went into all full kind of locker room speech before the game and get everyone fired up to go out there on the field and do what you got to do. Well, this week or this day, I want to challenge them again, and I might just challenge them again tomorrow as well. I want to challenge these guys to clean up the penalties. The penalties are a major, major problem. Look, the Jets are not a good team. There's make no mistake about it. They have not won a game in the regular season for a reason. You know, they're just not very good. But don't allow them to have multiple opportunities. I know it's something that Paul Gunther said today in his press conference. Don't give teams that are struggling multiple opportunities like the Raiders did against the Falcons. You know, perfect example, a field goal kicker misses a field goal, but there's a roughing the kicker, and all of a sudden it's a 15-yard penalty or a half the distance to the goal line penalty. They turn that into a touchdown when they shouldn't have got any points and the Raiders should have got the ball. I mean, you can't continue to shoot yourself in the foot if you're trying to win games. And if you're trying to make a playoff run, which everyone believes, at least I believe that they should make a playoff run, I believe they have the ability to win 4 out of 5 games that they need to win. But you're not going to get it done by shooting yourself in the foot. I like what I saw from the defense against the Falcons for the most part, but you've got to clean up those penalties. You can't have 3rd and long and then give up, you know, some kind of stupid penalty that gives a 1st down. Roughing the passer, those are just, you know, I don't want to say idiotic because I don't want to disrespect anybody, but those are just dumb penalties. You know, Malik Collins hits Matt Ryan super late. No reason for that. Max Crosby hits the quarterback late. No reason for that. You know, you run into the kicker. No reason for that. Those 15-yard penalties, those are unacceptable. You know, if you jump off sides once, twice, you get called for illegal contact, fine, I get it. They're ticky-tack. But those 15-yarders, those drive extenders, you saw it. Jonathan Abram got called for one against Kansas City on Tyreek Hill out of bounds. Those are just undisciplined. Get disciplined about yourself. You've got 5 games. You're guaranteed 5. Be disciplined. Clean it up. You were doing a good job with that early in the season. Get back to that. You got a little loose. If you want to win these games, you cannot allow these teams to have extra opportunities at scoring. And so that's got to clean up first and foremost. So that's what my challenge for the Raiders are this week. Clean up your penalties. Go out there and play a mistake-free game as far as, you know, giving up those hidden yardage that you don't see until you look at the box score later on.
Q, it was remarkable the way this year started, factoring in the discipline shown by the Raiders in not getting penalties, and then, of course, the NFL not calling penalties on them. At the same time, you know, before I dismiss any sort of lingering bias from NFL officials against the Raiders organization, penalties have, for the most part, have been down because of COVID, right? They're not calling penalties. Holding is down significantly. Others are as well. But the disturbing thing for me about this, the last few weeks with the Raiders and penalties, is it's coming at a time of the year when you shouldn't see it. Now, if this team was heavily penalized at the beginning of the year and just, you know, it was one of those years, then you understand it's not surprising. But the fact that they're getting to crunch time and this is becoming an issue now becomes a problem. So they were tied for the 4th fewest penalties per game in the first 9 weeks, and now they're tied for the 2nd most over the last 3 weeks.
Exactly. And that's got to be cleaned up, man, that you're not going to win a lot of games. I mean, 140 yards in penalty yards last week. Like, come on, man. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know if you had 140 yards in total offense, but you gave up 140 yards in total penalties. Like, that's not okay.
No, and listen, there's calls that didn't go the Raiders' way. For example, some holding calls on defenders, things like that. That happens every game. To every team. Okay. And so you have to account for that. You have to account for calls, especially interior stuff, holds and things that don't happen. But when you shoot, the Malik Collins is the perfect example. I mean, that is the perfect example of a call where you just, you know, things aren't going your way to begin with. And then you exacerbate it by doing something that's just, especially a guy like that who's a veteran, you just can't do it. You have to be hyper focused at this week. And that's why, to your point of the Q-tip about cutting back the penalties, I think I'm going to go on a limb here. It's going to sound crazy, but I am going to say that this is the most important game the Raiders have played in the last 2 or 3 years, because they need to show that they can bounce back from basically, which was a brain fart for them.
Yeah.
It was a lack of focus. And you also have the playoffs riding on. So you need this for this season to be successful, Q. You just can't lose this game.
No, you can't. And there's no reason, like I said, to give this Jets team that is not good. Everyone knows that they're not good. Don't give them any fuel. Don't up there, you know, don't set them up for success by getting stupid. Again, I get some penalties, effort penalties, but that Malik Collins one, for example, I mean, he hit Matt Ryan so late that it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I couldn't even argue and be like, oh, that's a BS call. I couldn't even say that. And I heard John Gruden yesterday say that, oh, well, there's calls that, you know, we sent into the league. Look, man, you guys had 11 penalties. There might have been a couple calls here and there, and I agree there was a few suspect calls, but there wasn't 11 suspect calls. And you know, when Collins hits the quarterback, or when a guy runs into the kicker, or when Crosby hits the quarterback, I think Matt Ryan got hit about three times late. Those aren't okay, and those aren't ones that you should send in, because they were just bad discipline on your part.
Right. And what penalties also do, Q, is they give the team, especially in this case, which is a bad Jets team, okay, they give them the opportunity to hang around. Remember, we had John Kincaid on last week about the Falcons. That was his warning to us about the Falcons. If you let them stay close, if you give them opportunities, they'll beat you. And that's what those penalties and turnovers were able to do. I think on a given day, if the Raiders are playing at their best, there's no way the Falcons beat them. And the same thing with the Jets. But by doing that, by turning the ball over, by committing penalties, which gives your opponent better field position, more opportunities, especially, you know, you have a third and long and you get a penalty and it gives them a first down after you held, that just kills you. It kills momentum. It kills attitude. It just it kills a will for a team like that, and so they just can't do it. But how concerned are you, Raider Nation? You're quiet today. 702-365-92, and that's cool. I mean, Q and I can hold it down by ourselves. You know, what do you guys think about this and what the Raiders are doing? You know, are you concerned at all about this rash of penalties the last 3 weeks? It's been huge. Give us a call, 702-365-9200 as well. But I would imagine John Gruden, and JT talked about it on the show, actually, Q. John Gruden he was good with the media yesterday. He was very light. He was funny and all that stuff. But JT was saying that he is all business and he is not happy. And I think that's a good sign, because you need to drive the importance of this time of the year into the young players, particularly into their head. And for the veterans, remember, with all due respect to them, including Derek Carr and all that, they have not won. They have not won anything, okay? They have not gone to the playoffs and won a playoff game. So this is new for everybody, and you have to set the expectation that the intensity gets higher and higher and higher for each game you go by. These last 5 weeks, by the time they get to that Miami game, it's going to be at a fever pitch.
Yeah, no, it really will be. And I'm glad to hear that Gruden is fired up and, you know, angry about the what happened on Sunday and, you know, getting this team right. That's a good thing. You know, I go back to Hard Knocks a couple seasons ago, back before the 2019 season, where he opened up episode number 2, which happened to be my favorite episode of Hard Knocks, and said, we need better blanking execution. That's exactly the kind of guy I'm hoping that the Raiders have been seeing all week long is Chucky again. You know, that's when I thought, hey, Chucky's back after week 2 of Hard Knocks last year. That's the guy I want to see. Better blanking execution. That's exactly what the Raiders need this week.
They do. And I really do think they're going to get it. And they'll get back on track. Well, we finally have a caller today. The quiet Raider Nation speaks. And it's our good guy in LA. It is Eddie. Eddie, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how you doing, fellas? To answer your question, no, I am not worried about the penalty. Reason why is I'm more worried about their focus in this game. I think they'll be a lot better focused than they were last game. I have no clue why they showed up the way they did. I don't think anybody can tell anyone why, not even the coaching staff. But they all collectively just, you know, laid an egg. But more so, I'm more worried about their focus this week just from their previous past of them having two bad games not go their way. And letting them affect their psyche. So I'm more worried about it. In 2016, I don't know if you guys remember, there was games there with Del Rio. It seems like the more penalties they got, the more sure you knew they were going to win the game. So you know, that's kind of what I'm saying. I don't really think that goes into their mindset. I think it was just a bad game that we're all harping on. I think we just got to focus more so on making sure we get this office back on track and find a way to rush the passer. That hurt us against, in my opinion, that did hurt us a little bit against the Falcons, but it'll definitely hurt us against the Jets. The Jets, what, have given up 19 sacks this year or so?
19, yeah.
So
yeah.
We have to be able to disrupt the passing game for them, and we got to get to the quarterback. I mean, they're no more excuses. None of this player is hurt or that. No, they got bodies there, and the Jets have proven not to be able to take care of their quarterback. So I want to see sacks. I'm not going to put a how many. I just want to see their quarterback on the ground because they sacked the hell out of him, not because they lost. They got all pissy and pushed them and had a bad penalty.
No, no doubt about it, and I think too that the defense. I mean, look at the defense too; they're going to have an opportunity to shine. And offensively, Dan Leberfeld said it earlier, Q, and that is Derek Carr is going to have a lot of time.
Yeah, well, he will. He will. I mean, it's simple as that. He will have time. They're not great except for Quinnen Williams at getting to the quarterback. I believe he has, what, 5 sacks as a defensive tackle?
Yeah.
But they just got to execute, you know. And the one thing I'll say about, you know, what my man said about Del Rio's year and the fact that they got so many penalties and they still found a way to win games, they did. I mean, I can go back to that Tampa Bay game where they had over 200 yards in penalty yardage and they found a way to win that game. The difference is in John Gruden's offense, and this is just offensively, in John Gruden's offense, you got to stay ahead of the chains. You're not a team that's going to come back 3rd and 12, 3rd and 15, and pick up those chunk yards like that. It's just that's not how this offense is built, and the defense isn't good enough to come up with turnovers, on the regular to be able to set yourself up for, just in case you're giving up a lot of yardage and penalties. The 2016 defense created a bunch of turnovers. This team does not create a bunch of turnovers.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got our good friend Rossi in Australia. We'll get you up, Rossi, first right after the break, and then we're going to be going out to the Lodge in Henderson right near the Raiders' now shut-off facility, at least to us in the media. But we're going to go out there to talk with Vinny Bonsignor, his show In the Huddle, coming up next here at 4 o'clock on Raider Nation Radio. So don't go anywhere. You're with Q and Scott, Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Back here, Silver and Black Today, powered by Sam and Ash. Injury attorneys, visit them at samandash.com. We're back. We're going right on the phone lines. We're running out of time. We got to get out to Vinny here in a minute, so want to get on our callers. Rossi in Australia. Rossi, what's going on there on a Friday for you?
Yeah, it's beautiful here. Leading into a weekend. Should be the low 90s in Fahrenheit for you guys. So lockdown is fully and utterly released, so we can enjoy the sunshine a little bit more. So
nice.
Sorry to rub it in. I know you guys are having some trouble, and I really wish the best for you all.
Thank you.
In regard to the penalties, I don't disagree with anything that Q said during the Q-tip, but I just want to point out just one thing. Two things. One, Malik Collins, he's never been that close to the quarterback all year, so, I mean, he was always going to hit it, that's for sure. But the second thing is that I've actually just been looking at the ref crew, and we've only had the same ref crew twice, which is Land Clark for the Buffalo game and then for the Atlanta game. And in the Buffalo game, we had 7 penalties for 66 yards, but a lot of that was just all defensive interpretations of pass interference and roughing the passer. I do disagree with Q in regard to the roughing the kicker. Personally, I think that he got pushed, he rolled. It's hard to stop momentum 5 yards out. But I think you've also got to look at the crews that are calling and interpreting the penalties that they are calling right now. Holding down, yeah, great, not a problem. But PI, illegal hands to the face. We've seen Max Crosby's head snap back 3 or 4 times in a game and nothing get called. So I also look at the crews and go, what have you missed instead of what are you calling all the time against the Raiders? That's just my take, boys.
Yeah, Appreciate that, Rossi. Yeah, I've heard that out there. A lot of folks talking about the same thing. So it's not surprising. Yeah, because you have to ask the other side of that question, right?
Yeah, and no, look, it's a good point. And he brings up a good point, especially when he's talking about, you know, the running into the or the roughing the kicker. I agree. I think that, you know, dude was held. I think he was thrown. But at the same time, I think you've got to make an effort where, to me, when I'm looking at him and he's rolling, he rolled, to me, about two rolls more than he really needed to and ran into the kicker. I feel like that's a little undisciplined at the same time. Yes, he was aided in a major way, but I think that you know the severity of these things. You've got to do a little bit better job of trying to stay out of harm's way.
Absolutely. By the way, tomorrow's show, Mo Moten will be with us for his weekly spot. Senior NFL columnist at Silver and Black Today and contributor at Bleacher Report. Jeff Parlas from Book It HQ. We're going to do a little bit of betting action. We'll talk not only about the Raiders game, but he'll give you three big picks for the weekend in NFL action. So Jeff will be with us. And then, of course, Kalen Kaler from Bleacher Report about the NFL's unevenness in enforcing COVID protocol penalties and fines. So we'll talk to them. That'll be on tomorrow. Last caller of the day is a good friend, Charles, in Bowling Green. Charles, you're on with Q and Scott.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Yeah, you were talking about being worried. The only thing I'm worried about is Josh Jacobs. I hope Gruden rests him this week. Hope we can win this game without him, because we're going to need him against the Colts, the Dolphins coming up. I guess that's my biggest worry. And I hope all the Raider fans out here are supporting this radio station you are on, because this is really cool. This is the coolest thing in my 43 years of being a Raider fan that I've ever seen. And I just want to thank you guys. I used to listen to Scott on Sundays because I used to live in Nevada, but I had to come home for reasons, for family reasons. Uh-huh. And I listened to Q every day. He was there like a good old dog, especially when things were bad in the COVID. And I just want to say thanks, and Raider Nation better be supporting this radio station. But my only concern is Josh Jacobs. I hope that he rests him this week, and let's get ready to make our run. But, you know, we don't need any help. We just got to beat the Dolphins and the Colts, really, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got to keep that record going. So, Charles, thanks, man. We appreciate your support.
Good stuff.
Through two shows, and they were separate, and then the two of us come together for a new show here on Raider Nation Radio. And it really is a unique station, because yes, there are flagship stations for every NFL team, but they don't devote as much time and effort as we do here with the shows and being all Raiders and all NFL teams. So very good stuff. And he called you a dog, Q. You were
I am a dog. I'm like absolutely a dog, man. I try to be that alpha dog, but I don't know if I'm quite at that level yet, but I'm working on it, man. I'm trying to be.
All right. Speaking of alpha dogs, we're going out to Vincenzo. We're going to bring in Vinny Bonsignor, who hosts In the Huddle with Lincoln Kennedy, coming up here at the top of the hour. He is back at one of my favorite spots, the Lodge over on St. Rose Parkway, right near the Raiders practice and facility and headquarters. Vinny, the injury list got longer by one name.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, again, this time of year, you just kind of have to brace for the worst. And the Raiders are trying to obviously get through it. And I think that they'll be in fairly good shape come Sunday. But it's just like a never-ending type of a situation on who's showing up on the injured reserve list. And you just have to get through it. And it's not just exclusive to the Raiders. This has just been a wild year in all regards.
Vinny, I've heard multiple Raider fans saying that they hope that Josh Jacobs rests this week, because the Raiders are going to need him for the stretch run. I feel if he's available to go, there's no doubt about it, he's going to go.
Nope. You there? Vinny, did you hear Q or no?
I did not hear Q. I'm sorry.
Okay. Now, Q, go ahead, man.
Can you hear me now, Vinny?
I got you, brother.
Okay. We've had multiple callers and multiple Raider fans say that they feel like Gruden should rest Josh Jacobs because the Raiders are going to need him for the stretch run. I kind of feel like, hey, if he can go and he feels good, he's going to be a go, no doubt about it, this week.
Well, this is a stretch run, right. So I don't know what stretch run they're talking about.
Yeah,
because it started, especially after what happened on Sunday. You know, that's the thing. You lose on Sunday against the Falcons. That wiggle room that you might have had has disappeared. So for now, until you are securely, and I'm not saying you play him because if he's not ready to go, you don't push it, obviously. But if he's ready to go, he has to play. The Raiders would not be in the playoffs right now if the season were to end today. There's ground that needs to be made up now. And they sacrificed that. They gave all of it away by what happened against the Falcons. What's done is done. Now you have to look forward to getting back into that playoff picture. So they have their work cut out for them to do that, and they need all hands on deck. So this can't be a situation where you go into that game deciding, hey, he can play, but maybe we should rest him. No. You don't have that luxury anymore. If he can play, he plays. If not, obviously he can't play.
Vinny, I was real interested, too, by a piece you wrote today clarifying that when Carr was talking about the lack of focus at practice last week, he wasn't throwing his coach under the bus. Was there some sense there that that maybe it was misconstrued on what he said? Because I didn't see anybody in the media really jump to that conclusion. So I'm just interested where that's coming from.
No, but I think that, no, I think everyone in the media understood, you know, where he was coming from. I think some fans might have, you know, misconstrued it or misunderstood it. And I got to say this to Raider fans. Listen, I covered the Lakers for years, all right? People use the media all the time, whether it was Kobe Bryant or Shaquille O'Neal or Phil Jackson. Good teams sometimes do that. When you have to turn the volume up a little bit because maybe a message isn't getting across, you go to the media, use the media to try to get it across so that everybody knows what's up. It's not that big of a deal. There's no... Everyone, I get it that everyone feels like feelings and this and that. There's no time for feelings right now. There's zero time for feelings right now. Derek Carr's comments were directed exclusively to himself and the rest of his teammates. That's it. That's who he was talking about. This wasn't about coaching. It wasn't about game plans. It wasn't about the coach keeping his foot on the gas. It was the players being accountable to themselves. Listen, and Lincoln will attest to this, you can't go 16 weeks being sharp as a knife every single week. It just doesn't work that way. But there's some teams that could get by without a complete lack of, or a complete and full sharpness. But the Raiders aren't one of them right now. They're not there yet. And so I think what Derek Carr was saying was what's done is done. The key is make sure it doesn't happen again. This was all about moving forward and making sure that doesn't happen again, because it's inevitable, honestly, even to the best teams, that it is going to happen. But you need to have somebody that's in a leadership position that says, that was unacceptable. We know that. Look what happened. Shocking. We got, you know, our you-know-what beat. Let's make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, Vinny, I'm glad that you're not, you know, I agree with you. You can't have hurt feelings. So in that light... we don't want to hurt your feelings, but Q was rethinking the conversation yesterday about Marcus Mariota.
Okay, what you got, man?
We talked real briefly, and I was just saying that I feel like the Raiders whiffed on that because they're paying him a lot of money, and yeah, he's a good insurance policy, but with that being said, he hasn't been active all season, so he's not really been that insurance policy if Derek Carr goes down.
Well, here's the pushback to that. I think that they're comfortable enough right now. If Derek were to go down during the course of a game, Nathan Peterman is capable of giving you relief during a game. But beyond that, if Derek Carr was to miss four games, let's say, then I think that's where a Marcus Mariota comes into play. I think right now, his roster spot is better served with everything that's going on. His roster spot is probably better served for, you know, another position. But if it got to a point where Derek Carr was going to miss significant time, that's where the value of Marcus Mariota comes into play. And I just go back to, what was it, 2016, where the Raiders are flying high and all of a sudden Derek Carr went down and they got caught with their pants down at quarterback. That killed them the rest of the season. They didn't have anyone that was like capable of coming in and providing solid relief. And so that's the and to me, that signing was a sign that they thought, we're pretty good here, but we don't want our quarterback going down being what drives our season in the opposite direction. They wanted to make sure they were covered with that position, and it's one of those investments that only pays off if needed, but the peace of mind it creates is worth its price in gold as well.
Yes, $7.5 million he made this year, right, as part of a 2-year deal, which I know they can walk away from.
I mean, that's quarterback. I mean, you got to. That's the other part of it. Quarterbacks, even good backup quarterbacks, are going to cost a little money. It's not in accordance with other positions and other backup positions. By the way, most of those guys actually get on the field. If you're a backup linebacker, you're probably going to play, mm-hmm. You know, cornerback, whatever. But there's only one quarterback, and you only get hurt in that situation if you don't have a capable backup to replace your starter should your starter go down. So does it cost a lot to have that peace of mind and possibly have that kind of a player in case your quarterback goes down? Yeah, $7 million is a lot of money, quote-unquote. But it's better to have that when needed than not have it if you do need it.
Ah, there you go. See, no fair feelies enough. Were hurt.
No. And I knew they wouldn't be. I just didn't have enough time to talk about it yesterday. And so, you know, I was still thinking about it a little bit later. It's one of those things that I went to bed still thinking like,
And I totally get that thought as well. I mean, you know, on its surface, you're like, wow, boy, that $7 million could have been better used at another position. There's no doubt that it could have. But at the same time, if the quarterback goes down and, you know, you had decided to go get another cornerback or something like that for that amount of money, and when it comes right down to it, Derek Carr gets hurt and you don't have a real true viable backup, that's when people start saying, hey, how come you didn't invest in a backup? That's the, you know, so it's just one of those kind of situations where, you know, you feel like the value is on an in-case basis. And you hope you never have to use it.
Yeah, and some people would argue he's contributed more than Malik Collins, so they have that too. So, whoa, Zinger, hey.
Wow.
Whoa. Okay. Vinny, have a great show, man. I know you're out there at the lodge. Go see Vinny. Hang out, of course, appropriately distanced with your mask on, but you can sip in between, and I'm sure Vinny and Lincoln will say hello to you. Vinny, have a great show.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Have a great show, brother.
There you go. Vinny's coming up in the huddle with
Man, Lincoln I got to get Kennedy. On his kind of schedule, man. This dude's at a bar every single day, man. I respect that, man.
Well,
I got to get on his schedule for real.
Tequila Embajador, which is his sponsor, gets him out in those places. It's pretty cool.
Well, tell Tequila that I'm down, man.
I know. We got to get out there, man. I'm telling
you. I like Tequila.
We got to unleash us on the world.
What'd you say it was? El Habalor?
Embajador.
Bajador.
Gotta roll your
Hello.
R's. Embajador.
Hello. That's
right.
The one movie clip I know.
There you
Hello.
Go. Hello.
That's the one movie clip I
yes.
know.
There's also a Seinfeld episode where his stomach makes noises and he says it sounds like him going, hello. So,
I wasn't the Seinfeld guy. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Q, have a good night, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. Have a great show or a great night.
All right. For Q Myers, for DeMond Cotton, and Chris Chapman, I am Scott Gilbranson. We'll be back here at 2 o'clock tomorrow, full slate of guests as we get set for the Jets game. We'll have game predictions. We'll have your phone calls. We are Silver and Black Today. You can visit us, silverandblacktoday.com as well. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Raider Nation, right here on the home of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio 920.